Well, as I said, with all our lakes and rivers, I think we have a kind of a boater's paradise here in Wisconsin. I've spent a lot of time on the water myself in a whole variety of boats and canoes and kayaks. And we're going to be talking about what you can do to stay safe while enjoying those natural resources. Larry Mueller here. And back in the studio with us today, Katrina Noyan, Safety Specialist Warden at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Katrina, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And also with us today, Kyle Drake, Recreation Safety Warden at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Kyle, thanks for coming by. Appreciate it.
No problem. Larry, how are you doing?
Pretty good. We're going to be talking about boating safety with Kyle and Katrina, and certainly take your questions and comments about outdoor recreational safety. Maybe you've taken a boating safety course. What tips did you take away from it? Maybe you've got an experience to share. I hope you'll join in the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. Well, let's talk about safety wardens for it. What are some of the responsibilities of a safety warden, Katrina?
We do a lot of various things. We work in the field enforcement. We work with local agencies, the sheriff's departments, municipalities on the water. So we are out there working enforcement. We also work with the volunteer instructors because all of our safety classes are taught by volunteer instructors. So we work with them, we train them so they can put on quality classes. Those are just two of the things. We do a lot of other things as far as permits with waterway markers and things like that, but those are really the two main things that we do.
And what kind of special training do you get for this to become a safety warden?
Well, you have to be a law enforcement certified officer. So you go to the academy. When you get hired at the DNR, there's an academy that you attend. There's field training that you attend. And then when you come to as a recreational safety warden, there's a lot of specialized training that you also receive. Kyle can talk on that as well.
I was lucky. I was a field warden for 19 years before I got into the recreational safety as a conservation warden. So I knew a lot of the information regarding the safety classes and the permitting and so forth. So a lot of it is just learning on the job, following policy and procedure and manual set up by the DNR.
You know, I've spent so much time on the water, and I can't remember if I've talked about this before, but I've probably been stopped at least 10 times on the water. And I have to say, every single time, the people from the DNR who stopped me were polite and friendly. And I've had, you know, my fish checked, and I've had the boat registration and all that checked. And I never had a ticket or anything. I wasn't doing anything untoward while I was out there, and I was just stopped. But I have to really compliment the wardens because they make it, usually it's fairly quick, and they're friendly, and men and women, and they do a wonderful job.
Yeah, most people recognize being stopped by a police officer. They're out there driving traffic laws, and they're, you know, recognize the need for enforcement there. When it comes to recreation, they have a tendency to be a little more, I guess, not as open to law enforcement. But like you said, if we can be quick about it, be polite with them, we recognize that they're out there having fun, enjoying the natural resources. So we want to make sure that we don't impinge upon that enjoyment.
Yeah, well, it works. You're doing a good job there. What can legally, or I shouldn't say what, who can legally operate a boat with a motor here in Wisconsin? Is there a certain age limit? What do you got, Katrina?
Yeah, if you're a regular motorized boat, if you have a kid that's under the age of 10, they can't operate a motorboat. If they're between 10 and 11 years old, then they can operate a motorboat, but only if they're accompanied by a parent or a guardian or someone that's at least 18 years old that the parent says, yeah, you can be the guardian temporarily for my kid while this is going on. If you're 12 to 15 years old, there's two ways you can operate a motorboat. It's that same reason, that parent or guardian, if they're with you, or you've completed a DNR boater safety course. Okay, a DNR boater safety course. And then if you're at least 16 years old, you can only operate a motorboat if you have a boater safety course certificate, if you've attended a class. And then those things change when you get to PWCs. So if you're under the age of 12, you can't operate a PWC. But if you're between the age of 12 and 16, you can only operate it if you have a boater safety certificate. So it's a good idea to get that certificate and get them the what they need to operate safely so they know.
And add on to that, once they turn 16, again, they need a boater safety course if they're born after January 1st of 89. So you're looking at people 27, 28 years old, in order to operate a boat, and younger need to take the safety course.
You know, I think that's really, I really think that's a worthwhile thing. I mean, we do the same thing for hunting and some of the other sporting areas. And I know with hunting, for example, I think it had a very positive effect on hunter safety that student, you know, youngsters have had to go through a training program. I think there's data even that shows that was a big deal. Boater registration. Who needs, let's say you've got a 10-foot rowboat without a motor on it. Do you still need to register that boat?
No. The only boats that need to be registered would be boats that have a motor on them. Once they put a motor, whether it's a gas-powered or a trolling motor, it would need to be registered. Or if it's a sailboat, that's over 12 feet. So any manually propelled boat does not need to be registered. Canoes, kayaks, rowboats do not need to be registered. There is a voluntary registration program if you want to register it, just for tracking purposes or in case it's stolen and so forth. But the two big items is motorboats have to be registered and sailboats over 12 feet.
I got to tell one on myself. Living on the lake, I had my registration and my sticker. And the first time going out, we're all excited. We go out about 100 yards or 200 yards, and already I'm stopped by a DNR safety person and say, "You don't have your registration." And I said, "Oh, I've got my registration. It's just back in the house right there." And I pointed to the house and he said, "Well, let me just check." And they could check right there electronically and said, "Yeah, you do have that. Why don't you turn around right now?" And I said, "Believe me, I'm going right back." And I went back and got that registration, that tag that you have to have.
Right. That's the nice thing about our system is that we can check it by radio to verify that the registration is there. It's all, computerized, just like automobile registration. So.
And I was really glad I had it. It would have been embarrassing if I had forgotten to get actually pay for that. Well, what all do students take away from the safety course itself?
You know, they learn a lot of things. The boating safety course covers a lot of material, but they learn from, basically the rules of the road or navigation. They learn about identifying things that can be dangerous. They learn about, the importance of safety tips of just things to do before you go out, things to do once you're out, and things to do once you come back in. But it encompasses a lot of information.
Yeah, especially important is that's safety equipment that you need on a boat. That's all covered in that course as well.
And if you've got safety equipment in the boat, and, for example, life jackets, it's a good thing to have those on because if you don't, I have firsthand experience with a guy that I fished with all my whole life who fell out of the boat in a fall fishing trip and drowned, and he was a great swimmer. A very good swimmer, and he didn't have his jacket on.
Yeah, life jackets by far are the most important piece of equipment you have on a boat. And the Wisconsin law is they have to be readily accessible. You have to be able to get to them in case of emergency, but you are absolutely correct. It does no good to be in a boat when you're in the water. So when you're out there on the water, please wear your personal flotation device, your life jacket.
And I really like the new ones. I mean, the newer ones, they're comfortable. You know, somebody who fishes muskies and stuff, you can wear them, you can cast, and you're It's not like the old ones, Katrina.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you hear people say, if I go out on a boat, I can't get the people that are going with me to wear a life jacket because they say it's uncomfortable. But there's just so many styles now. And they're really, you know, making them to kind of what activity you're doing so that it's just a lot more comfortable. So, I mean, when you're wearing a life jacket, we talked about it's just too late if you're in the water. I mean, and you have to think about things like if you fall, you're having a medical condition, things like that, where you're just not even...
Hit your head
you
when
hit
you
your
fall.
Head and you're not able to put it on. Those are the type of things. That's one of our biggest things we, you know, try to talk about is wearing your life jacket, putting it on and having it. Because, you know, the statistics show that a majority of the people that in our fatalities, they drown when they didn't have a life jacket on. So,
Joe in Fontana, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a hunter safety related question. I'm just wondering if there's any private organizations that could teach the class. I've been trying to get my soon 14-year-old godson into hunter safety for 2 years, and in South Central Wisconsin, they're just the classes are few and far between, and they fill up immediately on the website. And I'm just wondering, you know, I have him as a mentor, but I'd like to get him through the hunter safety, and I'd like to take it as well.
Yeah, I actually took my daughter through the hunter safety program. And I actually, I hadn't gone through a program myself, although I hunted for many years, and I went through the Hope Rod and Gun Club, which is just outside of Madison, a great group of people that have been well-trained. And so that's a rod and gun club, and I'm pretty sure, Kyle, there are others, but I know you wish there were more because these classes fill very quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Again, these, like Katrina mentioned, these classes are taught by our volunteers. We certify them, we train them, but it's up to them to set their schedules based on, you know, they have jobs, they have a life too. So sometimes it is difficult to get in the class. My recommendation, sir, would be give one of the recreational safety wardens out of the Waukesha office.
A quick call, and we'll come back to that. So stay listening, Joe. We need to take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back, and we'll talk some more about that and other things as well. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at safety when you're on your boat and canoe or kayak with our two guests today. Katrina Noyan, a safety specialist warden at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and with me in the studio as well is Kyle Drake, who is recreation safety warden at the Wisconsin DNR. So great to have them along. What do you do to make sure you and your riders are safe in your boat? Do you have an experience to share? I've given a couple of my own, one sad and one kind of a little funny, I guess. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I do, you know, Joe in Fontana had called and you know, wondered about private organizations for hunter safety courses. And I see we got a call from Bill in Oconomowoc. He said the Dousman Gun Club offers hunter safety courses in the spring and fall. But Katrina, do you want to talk a little more about that whole issue?
Sure. The DNR, we recognize how many people are trying to get into these courses. So over the years, we've tried to adjust and kind of do some different types of courses as far as length. The volunteer instructors have a lot of leeway as far as you know, when they're going to hold their courses, but we have different types. So we have, you know, your standard course where you may have to come one or two times in within 2 weeks or three times.
I think it's three times.
Yeah. So, and then we also have where you can do the coursework online and then you come in for a full day of training. So it's we call it online coursework with a field day where you come in and be trained. So there's some of those things that we have out there. Also for adults, we do have a test out procedure that is possible where if you're an adult, you can test out of hunter safety.
Mm-hmm. And I am proud to say I sat through the course and took the exam and got 100 on it and got 100% on the safety part of it, handling the guns and so forth. So that's a lot of fun. But the online is one other, you know, that way is good. You still get a day an all-day kind of workshop, because I really do think it's important to actually have things in hand.
Exactly. And that day is guns in hand all day.
Yeah.
Repetition, really working them through lesson plans and things like that. So yeah, it's a very good addition to our traditional type of courses.
So Boating Safety 2, and Mike in Madison has a question or a comment on something. Mike, thanks a lot for calling.
Good afternoon. Yeah, so one of the least enforced rules, and possibly one of the more important ones that causes a lot of stress on the lakes, is the distance that boats are supposed to maintain away from each other while on the lake and away from docks and piers. Most people don't know that the boats have a separation rule, and as an avid fisherman and water skier, I can't begin to tell you the number of times I've gotten arguments over people dragging their kids on skis and tubes right over the top of my fishing lines. Because they seem to have to get within 50 feet of you to show off while they're out water skiing. And most people don't know about the 100-yard, 200-yard, and 100-foot rules.
Yeah, well, let's talk about rules. Kyle?
Distance rules, you're correct. There is a 100-foot. Any boat, motorboat that comes within 100 feet of any raft, dock, or pier has to be operated at a slow and awake. And by slow and awake, we mean just basically idle speed, the slowest speed you can go and still maintain steerage. So there is a 100-foot distance from a rock, a raft, dock, or pier, slow and awake. When it comes to boat-on-boat, Wisconsin state law really doesn't have a distance requirement for boat-on-boat. The only requirement we have is if you're water skiing, you have to stay at least 100 feet away from an anchored, occupied boat. So mm-hmm. if both boats are in motion, or if they're not water skiing, Wisconsin state law does not have a distance of two boats being operated within each other. Just have to be operated reasonably.
Yeah, but if you're anchored and you're perch fishing or something, a skier would have to stay 100 feet from you.
Only a skier, correct. A boat being operated with a skier. So if you have a motorboat alone without a skier, there is no set back distance from anchored occupied boat. It only applies to water skiing. Now, there may be some else separate for particular lakes have municipal ordinances that might be more stringent than that. But by state law, there is no really a setback distance other than personal watercraft.
Well, you know, just common sense. You'd like to think people could use their common sense, but sometimes I think let's address this for a minute too, and that's alcohol out on the water. And you can be, let's say you're doing what Mike is talking about, and safety warden's out there and say, well, that's kind of all right, it's not breaking the rules technically, but let's just stop and talk to this person, and they're, let's say they're drunk. Can they be ticketed?
Yeah, we can't just stop people. We have to have probable cause that they're breaking a real law, violation. So there has to be a violation. We can stop them. If we think they've been drinking, think they're impaired, we will do fuel sobriety tests, and if we feel they are impaired, they will be arrested and be subject to the penalties.
Well, there we go. Thank you, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. It is, if you're out fishing, it can be annoying, to say the least. Well, Chris, I believe, in Mequonago has something for us. Chris, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I have a question. As far as having a throwable, like a boat cushion on your boat, is that a law?
Yeah, all vessels 16 feet or more in length have to, except canoes, kayaks, paddle boards, have to have a throwable device.
Sure. Now, for a throwable, can that, not a boat cushion, but can I use one of my buoys that I have a rope on it? You know, it's a float. Does that count? Is that sufficient? Or does that
no,
have to be
it's not.
Cushion?
You have to have a U.S. Coast Guard approved throwable.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I'm like, is that easier to throw, and I have that set up, but I have a boat cushion also. I was just wondering if that's good enough.
Sure.
But, okay.
Just like with your life jackets, they should be U.S. Coast Guard approved.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Andrea in Green Bay up next. Hi, Andrea. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, a couple things. First off, I just want to echo the whole slow no wake thing. We keep our boat up in Sturgeon Bay in the channel, and there are so many fishermen and pleasure boaters that cruise through there and throw a wake, and I don't think they understand the amount of damage that can be done to the boats that are on the docks. And that being said, I just also wanted to say that my husband and I and my two sons all took the U.S. Coast Guard Power Squadron class, and that is a huge, huge wealth of information. It makes me feel safe with my kids on the water. And honestly, they point out the majority of mistakes that the smaller craft do that can be completely dangerous, but I think they're just clueless. So are there any mandatory laws that some of these people really should be taking these boater safety classes?
Yeah, let's review those safety courses and who needs to or is required.
Yeah, again, basically, anyone 12 years old or older, if they can operate a boat by themselves, have to take a boating safety course if they're born on or after January 1st, 1989. So we definitely recommend everyone take the course. There is a lot of good knowledge. They talked about the Coast Guard course. There's Coast Guard Auxiliary Power Squadron. They also give a course, and they're even more in-depth than some of the DNR courses because they cover some sailing material and the Great Lakes material. So they are excellent courses. And, again, a lot of the stuff, like Larry said, it just boils down to common sense and being courteous to others out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrea, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the call. What a, you know, like that Coast Guard one, that really goes into depth, doesn't it?
Yes, a lot more about sailboats and, again, a little bit more about Lake Michigan and some of the regulations concerning Coast Guard, because Coast Guard has some more stringent regulations than the DNR does as far as being on those Great Lakes.
I want to go back to life jackets for a minute, Katrina. Let's talk again. There's a variety of life jackets out there. Coast Guard approved is certainly, you shouldn't buy one unless it is Coast Guard approved. But what other things, fit and so forth, could we talk about?
Yeah. You know, with life jackets, like I said, the U.S. Coast Guard approved, you want to make sure that they fit. That is one thing that is so important. You test it out, that it is in good condition and that it fits. You want to make sure that if you have a child and they're wearing a life jacket, they get thrown into water, they've had it on before, they know what to expect, and it's not going to fly off because it's too big. A lot of times you get on a boat and people will have their standard life jackets,
yeah,
and everybody will just get one, and it doesn't fit them. So everybody, really, the suggestion is to have their own personal life jacket so you know that it works for you and that it fits. That's really important. So condition, you want to check for at the beginning of the season, you know, again, that it still fits, tears, holes, it's not waterlogged, mildew, things like that, that it's just really in good condition, that the straps aren't broke, and that everything's working.
Yeah, makes good sense. Angela in Partyville, it's your turn. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is about, in regarding to the no wake zones as well. We live near a lake, and there's often boats driving faster than no wake, and I'm wondering what we can do if we notice that. Can we call somebody, or what should we do?
Yeah. Absolutely. If you see violations out there, you can call the DNR. We have a violation hotline number that's manned 24 hours a day. That's 1-800-847-9367, which if you correspond the letters, comes out to be 1-800-TIP-WDNR. So 1-800-TIP-WDNR. One of the good things is any kind of pattern on weekends at so-and-so time or what have you, it's a good thing to document, as well as you can get boat registration numbers. That would help out tremendously as well. Any kind of information that would help us identify who that person is, we definitely can follow up on that.
Sometimes, if you happen to be out on the lake, you could almost be at the same time or close to the same time.
Yeah, our law enforcement personnel, you know, there's only 160 field wardens in the state of Wisconsin.
We got 15,000 lakes.
15,000 lakes, yeah. You do the math. Doesn't turn out so well, but we try to do the best we can. We try to get out there during the heavy periods of traffic out there. But again, if you see things, there's that violation number, 1-800-TIP-WDNR.
What's the number of it again?
837-9367. 1-800-837-9367. I got to say it fast, otherwise I forget.
There we go. Thanks, Angela. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Dave in Augusta next. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Larry. Great show. I appreciate this. I just wanted to make sure that weather was brought up as a topic, as a safety topic. I know that I've musky fished a little bit longer on the water than I should have, and one time there was on the Chippewa flowage, front came in faster than I thought it was going to be, and I tell you what, I barely made it back to the resort. It was, lightning was right behind me, and I will never, ever do that again, you know? Just when you see something coming, even though it's peak time for fishing, I recommend getting off the water as soon as you can.
Very good advice, isn't it, Katrina?
It's definitely good advice. We always suggest before you go out, check the weather, know what it's going to turn into for that day, and really base that off of how far are you going, will you be able to come back? Because you see lightning, you should get off the water.
Yeah.
Same thing with other tips is like planning, filing a float plan, letting people know where you're going and when you're going to be back. So if you do run into any problems, that people can start looking for you.
And the Chippewa flowage is a pretty big body of water, and you've got a... I had some fun sometimes taking people out, and we'll go out a ways, and I'll say, okay, well now how do we get back to where we were? And 9 out of 10 times they have no idea how to get back.
Yeah, and if you can't make it to landing, just find some shoreline. Tuck in there and wait out the storm. It's better to be close to shore than be out in the middle of the boat or middle of the water with lightning in a aluminum boat.
Yeah, actually, I had a guy on the show once who was a fishing guide and was out on when a tornado came through. He got off the water, and another boat, and this is years back, another boat tried to outrun the tornado and actually took the boat over, and everybody in the boat drowned. So... Mm-hmm.
It can switch fast. I was on a boat once, same, where the fog rolled in, it started to hail, and you couldn't see 3 feet off the boat, and there were a lot of people on the water, and everybody was just hoping that everybody was going to stay put at that point, because you couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah, that is for sure. And Marcus in Green Bay would like to know if life preservers are required for kayakers. As an owner of a kayak, I would never get in mine without one on, but are they required?
Oh, absolutely. Any type of boat, any type of watercraft, regardless of whether it has a motor, regardless of the size, you need a wearable type life preserver, personal flotation device. So especially in kayaks and canoes, and especially on the Great Lakes, especially this time of year, if you're going to be a paddle sports person, I know Katrina's looking at some of the accident statistics. Last year, over 50% of our fatal boating incidents involved paddle or non-motorized boats, so your kayaks and canoes.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
We've had two already this year, two kayakers on the Great Lakes that went out, capsized, didn't have their life jackets, had hypothermia, and ended up drowning. So absolutely, if you're going to be in any kind of paddle sports, kayaks, canoes, or even stand-up paddle boards, find a life jacket that you like and wear it.
Yeah. Tom and Nina, your turn. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I heard you just talking about the Great Lakes.
Can you talk a little bit about safety in regards to riptide water movements along swimming beaches?
Okay, riptides, I was talking about the Great Lakes here, especially, along beaches. I mean, they're out there. And another friend who drowned on Lake Superior, who was also a good swimmer, who I think got caught up in something like that, Kyle.
Yeah, don't know a lot about riptides, and know on the oceans they talk about if you're involved in a riptide, you get pulled out to shore, away from shore. It's very difficult to head directly back towards the shore and fight the riptides. You're better off going with the riptide and then angling back to shore. I know that thing. But again, if you see large waves out there, there's probably some riptide because it's waves are turning over and it's pulling the water back out to sea or out to the main part of the lake. So
yeah.
If you see large waves, that probably there's a riptide. You should take care.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff in Stevens Point, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You guys were talking about lightning and boats, and I was wondering how sailboats deal with lightning. Smaller ones and bigger ones, they can't always get to shore right away, and you got a 30-foot pole sticking up in the air.
Yeah, that's a good question. Kyle, do you want to start?
Yeah, I don't know the physics behind it. I know there is some grounding of the boats being in the water and connecting, if a a mast is struck by lightning on a sailboat, I know, again, it's going to travel through the mast. It might travel through the boat, and it will travel into the water because water is a better conductor. I know there is some grounding there, but again, never a good idea to be out there.
No.
And I don't want to find out what exactly happens. I know I've had reports of electronics burning out in the boats because they're struck by lightning and you're losing any chance of any electronics, and your fish finders and your GPS and all that stuff goes out and it's gone. It's
fried. Yeah, when your GPS is gone out in the middle of Lake Michigan, you don't want that to happen.
No, definitely not.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Kathy in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have a cottage just outside of Milwaukee, and I've noticed with the proliferation, the abundance of jet skis lately, that people are really rude with jet skis. Do they have the same setback requirements as a boat?
PWCs, there's a little bit of a difference, so they can't be operated faster than slow no wake within 100 feet of any other vessel on the water body that you're on, 200 feet of shore on any lake, that doesn't apply to a river, and 100 feet of a dock, pier, raft, again, so that's the same as boats.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I was just thinking back to a few years back in the Madison chain when we had the water up so high that everything was no wake on the lake. And living on the lake, it was like, wow, is it really quiet out there now?
Yeah, that's something you have to be aware of. Again, we as wardens with the DNR, we enforce the state regulations. A lot of these lakes have municipal ordinances that are special to that lake that are enforced either by the wardens or it can be enforced by local boat patrols or Dane County Patrol, if you will. So not only do you have to know the state regulations, it also pays to find out what the specific regulations are for that lake, and they should be posted at the boat landing. So
yeah,
take time and look at that billboard at the boat landing to find out what the special regulations are.
Yeah, and there's sometimes differing lengths of in terms of fishing and so forth, depending on the lake too, which is another good reason to pay attention to those signs. Let's go to Andy in Mount Horeb next. Andy, hi.
Hi, Larry. I want to reinforce the importance of wearing a life preserver. I've fished a number of times. I fished a lake down in Tennessee called Dale Hollow Lake, which is a very large reservoir. And there's a sign on the lake. What the sign says, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but it said 500 people have drowned on this lake. Zero have drowned wearing a life preserver.
Yeah. That's a good sign to have up, isn't it, Katrina?
It's definitely a good sign. We can't stress it enough. That's so much a part of what we do is just the importance of it. It really would prevent a lot of fatalities if people would wear their life jackets.
And has the accident rate in Wisconsin changed over the years? We're kind of running out of time, but I just wondered off the top of my head. Is it
for boating specifically, it's been fairly static for a number of years. It really hasn't changed. We average somewhere between 18 and 20 boating fatalities a year. And like Katrina said, between 80 and 90% of those fatalities are going to be drownings because people are not wearing their life jackets. So considering we have 620,000 registered boats, motorboats, that's just motorboats, not including the kayaks, canoes. You know, it's still a very safe recreational opportunity. But again, we could make it even safer by wearing those life jackets.
A good message to end on. Kyle and Katrina, both of you, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. I hope you can come back and do this again. Appreciate it very much. Katrina Nguyen is a safety specialist warden with the DNR. Kyle Drake, recreation safety warden at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. It's always great to have folks come by to talk about these sorts of things. As I've said, I've had enough personal experiences that have ended very tragically that I enjoy having people on to talk about it. Tomorrow we'll talk about home remodeling and energy efficiency. So stay with us. Lots more in store.